Chapter 40. In the basement. The boiler. The goddamn boiler. The thought came into Jack Torrance's mind full-blown, etched in bright, warning red. On its heels, the voice of Watson. If you forget, it'll creep and creep. And just as not, you and your family will end up on the fucking moon. She's rated for 250, but she'll blow long before that. Now, I'd be scared to come down and stand next to her at 180. He'd been down here all night, poring over boxes and boxes of old records, possessed by a frantic feeling that time was getting short and that he would have to hurry. Still, the vital clues, the connections that would make everything clear, eluded him. His fingers were yellow and grimy with crumbling old paper. And he'd become so absorbed he hadn't checked the boiler once. He dumped it the previous evening around 6 o'clock, when he first came down. It was now... He looked at his watch and jumped up, kicking over a stack of old invoices. Christ, it was 4:45 in the morning. Behind him, the furnace kicked on. The boiler was making a groaning, whistling sound. He ran to it. His face, which had become thinner in the last month or so, was now heavily shadowed with beard stubble, and he had a hollow concentration camp look. The boiler pressure gauge stood at 210 pounds per square inch. He fancied he could almost see the sides of the old patched and welded boiler heaving out with the lethal strain. She creeps, and I'd be scared to come down and stand next to her at 180. Suddenly, a cold and tempting inner voice spoke to him. Let it go. Go get Wendy and Danny and get the fuck out of here. Let it blow sky high. He could visualize the explosion, a double thunderclap that would first rip the heart from this place and then the soul. The boiler would go with an orange-violet flash that would rain hot and burning shrapnel all over the cellar. In his mind, he could see the red-hot trinkets of metal careening from floor to walls to ceiling like strange billiard balls, whistling jagged death through the air. Some of them, surely, would whiz right through the stone arch, light on the old papers on the other side, and they would burn merry hell. Destroy the secrets. Burn the clues. It's a mystery no living hand will ever solve. Then the gas explosion, a great rumbling crackle of flames, a giant pilot light that would turn the whole center of the hotel into a broiler. Stairs and hallways and ceilings and rooms aflame like the castle in the last reel of a Frankenstein film. The flames spreading into the wings, hurrying up the black and blue twined carpets like eager guests, the silk wallpaper charring and curling. There were no sprinklers, only those outmoded hoses, and no one to use them. And there wasn't a fire engine in the world that could get here. Hello and welcome. I'm Douglas Bowles, and this is 42 Minutes, a production of SyncBook Radio and distributed by thesyncbook.com. It's Sunday, September 11th, and also our birthday. So tonight I'm joined by SyncBook Press Managing Editor Alan Green to talk about our journey. Hello, Alan. How are you doing tonight?
Fantastic. I like that you chose that as the intro. It took me a minute of listening before I realized, yeah, it's 9/11. That's pretty poetic.
You know, I don't know if people... I mean, so when I was geeking out on The Shining, and this was before the Rodney Asher explosion, I mean, it was definitely... A lot of us were geeking out on The Shining probably about the same time. You know, and 2001, there was that whole Kubrick thing. But I definitely zeroed in on the book... And there was something there that was really meaty for me that seemed like, you know, Stephen King was on to something. You know, that the idea of wealth and just being above the law. I don't know. Did you have any experience with The Shining?
I mean, sure. But I just want to throw a weird sink out here that I think I might have mentioned before. You know, on every 9/11, you see those sort of memes go around.
Never forget.
And, well, that too, but I meant the more, even the conspiratorial things, which is saying, you know, don't forget about that third tower that fell, right? Everyone knows the Twin Towers, and like always, what about Building 7?
Building 7.
So what most people, even in that conspiracy thing, don't talk about is there was a fourth building, a small 22-story building that was in between the Twin Towers, which of course also went down. So the Twin Towers were buildings 1 and 2. The building in between them was building 3, and then of course Tower 7, right? So what do you have? You have 1, 2, 3, and 7.
Oh, wow.
And so in the book, of course, it's room 217, 217. Yeah. And in the movie, it's 237. Either way, those are your numbers of what went down there. I just find that interesting. I don't know that it particularly means anything or whatever, but that's kind of stayed with me as an interesting little parallel.
Hmm. Well, I mean, it's funny because this year I don't feel this was such a huge sync node for so many of us. But the farther we get away from it, it seems like, I mean, it was one of those things where I was always looking, like if I found something, I was always like looking, you know, for winks, Twin Tower winks. And now, not so much.
Well, I think we've hit that stage. You know, I told you when I got into like the JFK 9/11 stuff with Suicide Kings and all that. I mean, I think one of my biggest sort of personal connections to all this was I remember being a child and hearing people talk about the JFK assassination as if, well, of course the government did it, or of course there was a conspiracy. You know, but that nothing changed. Like, it was just an accepted knowledge that, yeah, we kind of all realized that the story was bullshit, but what are you going to do about it? They killed the president. There's nothing I could do about it. And I just remember being a child and thinking it was so weird. It was someone of what's cognitive dissonance. It's also defeatist, but it's also, it's pretty brutally real. Like, what are you going to do about it? You know, do you rise up into a revolution, or do you, you know, figure out how to keep chugging along with your life? And so there's that. And when 9/11 happened, I quickly realized that this was my version of that, that I was going to get to see a generation grow up knowing that there was a conspiracy, and with enough time passing, more and more people would realize that there was something there. But with that same passing of time, it became less of a, not that there's a statute of limitations on September 11th or something like that, but in a practical sort of way, there almost is, right? It's hard to get people to, even if at this point 60% of the country thought that there was an inside job or something like that, it's 15 years out, you're not going to have a revolution in the streets over something that happened 15 years ago. It's a strange, weird little psychological phenomenon. I don't know.
But for whatever reason, it is like integral to our development and evolution as far as what we do. It's the wormhole,
which is why I released the first sync book. Well, we're celebrating this as our birthday. I did that on September 11th for that reason.
Well, with that in mind, I mean, so I was looking back a little bit. Do you recall? I mean, because everything is so much work now, but it feels like for whatever reason, from the time you had the idea, hey, let's do an anthology, to when it came out, that's not a whole lot of time, was it?
About 7 months.
Yeah, that doesn't.
It's not a lot of time, but it was a lot. It was a lot of work.
No, yeah. I'm not minimizing the amount of work.
Sure, but I don't even mean that to pat myself on the back. I mean, like, you know, when I think about the circumstances at the time, you know, doing that in that short amount of time required a very different set of circumstances that I'm not able to repeat, and most people aren't able to repeat.
All right, before we dig in this, Alan, what was your experience at the OLE 2016 Sync Summit? What do you take away from that?
Oh, wonderful to see everyone. It was too damn short. I mean, even though we added an extra day to it, it was still too damn short. You know, I'm still going through some personal stuff, so I was a little lower on energy than – than maybe normally I would be, but I was also really happy to be in good company. I know you. I listened to what you and Will recorded last week, and I think there was similar to like what happened for Hannah. I mean, there was a terrible tragedy in Hannah's life, and you know, in a way, I don't know how good of a support network a bunch of us nerdy dudes are, but I do feel like I was in some way grateful that if it had, she had to experience that, at least she was in a friendly environment and had, you know, good support network there. And I feel the same way for myself. Like I said, I was a little down, but felt really happy to be surrounded by people that I knew cared about me. And it helped a whole lot. I feel like our sync events are sort of doing these weird double purposes, which in one respect, it's the fun sort of entertainment spectacle, for lack of a better term, sort of side. But there's also a much more deep bonding, almost therapeutic, which is maybe a dangerous word to use, but you know what I mean? Like a sort of group. I guess is why people go to AA or something like that. You know, it's like, hey, let's all get together and just be a support center for each other. Even if you're not addressing your personal lives specifically, just to feel that camaraderie and certain level of understanding of we've all sort of delved really deep into certain abysses and rabbit holes. We've seen, you know, the one extreme of Kotze and joy and the other of hellish paranoia. And it's almost like I've spoken to more than one person in the last few months that this was almost like talking to people that had gone through the same war. And that's maybe a dramatic way to put it, but we all understood what we were talking about. Of if I talk to somebody else, they're not going to have the same context of like I've seen things that other people haven't seen, you know, or experienced things that. And again, it's not like human suffering or human elation is unique to the sync movement, but it's. The certainly the flavors of madness that we taste and wrestle with. I think having those people together to even just kind of share a look in each other's eyes and go, yeah, I know what you've gone through. I can sympathize. It just feels like a very comforting and welcome experience to be in all those people's company. And again, and then the other side of that is we're also having fun and doing weird, you know, little artistic expressions or showcases or whatever. So you're getting this really interesting sine wave of outward expression and
inward
reflection. Yeah.
So how many of Radio 8 Balls have you been to, do you think? Can you count it? I bet you I could count it.
Four, five. I mean, I guess.
Yeah.
I'm gonna say New York. And then what was
the
what
one
is that?
In the Oakland? Bay Area? Yeah.
Berkeley, California. Yeah. OE 2014 and OE 2016. So I think that would be four.
Yeah. And how did this one rate for you?
I thought it was great. Andras, you know, he's got lightning in a bottle. It's a great format. You know, I think the Radio 8 Ball idea is just wonderful. You know, he's a pain in my ass and, you know, he wants to, you know, shape that muse into his vision, which is totally understandable. It's what I do with my projects. It's what he's going to do with his. But I think regardless of where Andras and I may ever even have a disagreement in like artistic vision, there's a mutual respect of that source inspiration and the magic that's being captured through the Radio 8 Ball format that you just can't deny, and it keeps us it just keeps us working together and collaborating because I think it's wonderful.
Okay, so you listen to Will and I. Who and I've been thinking about this a lot. Who is the reverse Knight of Cups? Was it Andras or is it David?
Well, I'm sure it's everybody feels it's them in their own way. I would assume.
What did you make of that whole double cross?
Within the first 5 minutes of the movie, I had to step outside, get some air. It just hit me in a very personal way, sort of. And again, whether it's projection or not, you know, whatever my own personal demons I'm wrestling with, I saw in the film and the video and in the music, and was just like, holy shit, you know, like I need a minute. And I came back, and then I was sort of wrestling with that. And then Will, you know, there was the question of Will talking throughout the movie. Will saved me from spiraling dark in my mind, because I was fairly intoxicated. And
well, Will had that moment in the car. And so you had that same type of moment?
Yeah, so, right, Will said there was a moment for him where he was spiraling in the car. I was in during the movie. I mean, this is fucking early in the movie, you know, less than 15 minutes in. I was spiraling in my mind, not expressing any, I wasn't saying anything out loud, but very much in my head, I was in a dark place, totally internalizing everything and examining my life and my choices and my circumstances. And then Will just leans over and says some like absurd shit, you know, like, you know.
What did you say, Will?
Who the fuck knows, you know, but it just like his, you know, genuine enthusiasm and good natured spirit for life and for the excitement of Sync. And, you know, he saw it as like, oh my God, did you see blah, 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 blah? And I'm like, oh, right. This isn't just a movie talking to me, Alan, about what a douchebag I am. It's many things all at once, and it just snapped me out of that funk. And I very, very grateful for you, Will, for doing that.
No problem.
I don't know. Maybe so. I for a long time I've been talking about like collective moods or psychic weather, and I've been feeling that, you know, that kind of hard on oneself. Kind of, yeah, I'm a horrible person. Jack Torrance, basically, right? He knows, yeah. It's my job, Wendy. I have to do it. I don't want to do it.
Well, I mean, yeah, so there's the being hard on oneself, and I think that ties into sort of what we're talking about tonight, why we're together. I mean, one, we were here to celebrate, right? But I would hope that's the reason, not to be dwelling on you know, depressing topics or emotional states. But I do feel like over there have been periods throughout where I question sort of how successful we have or have not been. And of course, there's different metrics for that. You know, I'm not talking from like a, I don't know, financial or fame perspective, but, you know, sort of as our goals have remained vague and fluid over the years, it's hard to say how successful we've been at those things. I was getting pretty hard on myself I've got to say approximately over the last, you know, 9 months or so, I don't know. I had gotten pretty hard on myself about what we had accomplished or not. And it was only in the last month that I personally have been looking back on stuff that we've done, dude, stuff that I've done. I watched like a bunch of my old Cinquic Newses, and
we,
you know,
should talk about that, because I noticed, I've been thinking about the Sync book in particular. So it came out in 2011, but, and for the most part, it's not like it doesn't sell tons of units, but it is the entry point whenever anyone finds us, and so it does still sell a few a month. But I noticed when you were doing Sync Quick Newses, it was selling more. Like, that was a really influential, and what a gateway drug those little. It was a magic time, is what I'm saying.
Well, that's just, you know, again, I want to be clear.
So
I'm
like,
not so much even patting myself on the back, rather saying I was really hard on myself. And then in the last month or so, I've looked back and said, holy shit, we produced so much stuff and accomplished so much that even if I, you know, the days when I'm like, what was the point or what did we accomplish? I'm like looking at it and I see that the reward is in, you know, the proof is in the pudding. Like, no, we didn't make $1 million and we didn't sell a million books and we didn't, enlighten the world or tune in a fucking generation of sync heads necessarily, but we've done a fuck ton of amazing work and we've had so many wonderful guests and captured so much amazing content. Is a sort of seems like a profane word for the magic that I think it is.
But, genuine human moments.
Yeah, oh, yeah, yeah.
Like, all right, Will, what do you think back? Like, is there a show like 42 minutes grew out of a way to, you know, sell the sync book on some level?
I don't think it started that way.
Kind of did, because we were talking. It's like, oh, here's this thing. We can talk to Ray about his chapter, and then we talk to Christopher Hunter Myers about his chapter, and we talk. I mean, that was how I was booking these shows.
Well, sure, but I mean, that wasn't necessarily the sell sync books. It was like an opportunity to start the conversation.
Oh,
all the
no,
who...
it's not, man. That's been the goal, selling sync books.
All right, Ross. But what are you asking?
I don't know. Genuine human moments from the past? I was thinking about the Dean Radin show. A song came on the radio, and
Dean
I'm like,
Dean Radin.
That was a good show. Like, people who are into Stranger Things and they want to know about the paranormal. Like, we've got something there.
I don't know. I like the Philip K. Dick series that we did when we were talking to it, because once again, I mean, those are all human moments. We're talking about this metaphysical concept that everybody has their opinion on, but these are like individuals who were with Philip,
yeah.
And you know, you got some very personal and very almost, you know, anecdotal.
We got in the room.
Yeah, just weird. It's weird because, like, there's this whole idea of who a hero is,
yeah.
And like their life being metaphysical. But then you like start talking about Philip K. Dick and how he was like kind of, you know, lack of a better term, and just to use the jargon that the kids use today, kind of a loser in a way. You know, there was, I don't know. That's the thing about Sync to me is like it's taught me how to be human in a lot of ways and let people have their experiences that I don't have to dictate or make fun or make sense of. I don't have to make sense of things that people experience, because a sync is kind of a very personal thing to begin with. That's why a lot of people have problems relating it to others, is because it's this, I guess you had to be there kind of thing. So we accept that. There's a lot of weirdos in the sync community, myself and everybody on this phone call included, who have a little quirks, and the way that they process information is kind of a little bit different. It's kind of like a form of dyslexia or anything.
Or autism.
We've learned to allow people's humanness. Talking about Christopher Hunter Myers and everybody else involved, to me, Sync Book Radio has been a giant place full of blemishes and farts and hiccups and burps and all the things that come along with being human. I mean, it's not made up. It's not groomed. I don't know if you guys would agree with that, but
it's been a fun journey, but it's become quite accomplished, I would say.
Yeah, I think what Will's saying is the accomplishment, part of the accomplishment is the authenticity of bearing the warts and all. I mean, that's, you know, I would say if, like, if I can always record, for example, you know, that's the point.
Holy
you know?
Moly, the last one, I was thinking David's going to become a star. Like, he is, you know, like we.
You talking about the live one?
Yeah. So. Yeah. That was incredible. Like, I think after that came out, you could see all the heads that didn't go were like, oh, shit, we missed it.
Yeah, I hope David deserves to be a star. I hope he, I hope that's the case. I mean, if that's what he wants, you know. But I guess I just mean, I think he's a brilliant fucking guy, and I hope he gets the recognition that he deserves.
He's really on his path. He feels like, you know, as far as like everyone following their through lines, it's like how we used to refer to it. He definitely is in his flow, and it's fun to listen to him when he's warmed up.
It's fun to be around David.
Yeah, for 5 hours in traffic.
Well, I haven't had that.
So, Alan, so what was going on with Will? He's like, on the last 42 minutes, he's like, yeah, that was a really interesting time in my life, or really confusing. What the heck was going on?
He was pretty fucking high and pretty fucking excited, and he was wonderful.
Couldn't have said it better myself.
He was a pleasure to be around, for sure. Like, it was not like laughing at somebody, laughing with somebody. It was like, what a great fucking environment to be in, you know.
Meanwhile, in the other car headed towards the Sync Summit, what was that car ride like, Doug?
It was fun, funny, and fun. And trafficy.
So, I mean, don't get the wrong idea. We had plenty of traffic to deal with, and there was some uncertainty. We didn't know that we were so far ahead of you, but there was this idea in the traffic jam, which was like, something's wrong. Like, why are we faced with so much traffic right now? Like, what's jamming us up was the kink that we were having, or at least I internally was working out. Like
you're saying, if the Sync Summit is, you know, guided by divine providence, it's supposed to, like, the gates of traffic are just open up before us, and we're all supposed to get together and have this magical weekend rather right. than sitting in traffic and feeling like there's opposition and obstacles, is what you're saying?
Like, yeah, in a way, that's exactly like where's our timing off wrong? But see, the whole thing was being talked about like linearly. Like, one idea would jump in my head, and then another would jump, and then when we got to the clue and then Mrs. White drove by, it was like this weird feeling of, wait, even amidst this, we're in the right spot. Like, it didn't.
Yeah, the moment the car that said Mrs. White drove by was the moment that was just undeniable. Like, we were already at the Sync Summit, if you know what I mean. Yeah. Like, oh, it's like, not like we're, that was for me. It was like, yeah, first those questions of like, oh man, why is this happening? That's keeping us from being in the right place or the place we're supposed to be. And then you realize, no, this is the place we're supposed to be. Like, this is fucking.
Yeah. Now the Talking Head song is starting in my head. Well, okay, so let's do a quick little
wait.
Dun, 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 dun. Lift me up and yeah, I can't.
This
do
must
it.
Be the place.
This must be the place. There we go.
I just watched that movie actually this in the last few days. The Sean Penn movie wasn't very good.
2011, Sync Book 1. 2012, New York City.
And Sync Book 2.
Yes. 2013, Berkeley, and I think probably 2014, there's a Sync Summit, but somewhere in there, Sync Book Radio really goes crazy. 2016, Sync Summit, Oli, Part 2.
Yeah, so I mean, you know, chronology, I guess, would be Sync Book 1, the New York event. Oh, well, I would say the cabin to me was a huge thing.
Oh, yeah, which was right before. Yeah. So the essays came in the spring, you edited, and then in August of 2011, we had the Sync Cabin 1 and looked at the proof, and then it came out a month later, And then New York, the New York event to sell the book, 2012 was, and 2012 was such a bizarre year, but that was the, I think both Andras and my book came out that year, and then later the, towards the end of the year was Sync Book 2.
Correct.
Who's Crickets?
What do you mean?
Somebody's got Crickets.
Oh, that's me.
Those are Boise Crickets.
Yeah. Alan tells a story about listening to you and me and Halcott and my Boise Crickets.
Oh, yeah. There's like a old Merry Man podcast or one of the outtakes of that show. That's really the Crickets like just scored the whole thing. It's pretty beautiful, actually.
I remember that. Okay, so getting back on track, what are we trying to accomplish here, Douglas?
We've always just been selling sync books, Will.
You've always been the caretaker. Are you talking about this evening or at
yes,
the
this
sync
evening? Where are we talking about for plans in the future? I mean, it's a big thing here on whether or not Oli is going to be the site for all of these.
I was thinking about how you combine the best elements of Boise and Oli someplace else.
Yeah, no.
I mean, so like the thing that I liked about the Wally presentation was that that was absolutely free, but we had a state of the art facility. But then there was this intimacy in Boise that, I mean, maybe it was too intimate, but it really facilitated a lot of catharsis in the retreat mates.
Yeah. Yeah, Boise really felt like a therapy session, you know, like a hyper intimate, you know, not like therapy, like we all sat around and psychoanalyzed each other, but like literally like, hey, let's take quiet time to all spend all these days in a house together and actually get to know each other and talk about, you know, if someone had something they needed to express, if somebody had something, you know, that they were going through, or just, you know, to laugh and, you know, drink a few beers, whatever it was. Just the intimacy, I feel like, was so elevated that it allowed for deeper connection. Whereas, like, see, like in 2014, Olympia. Now, again, I know I have a different perspective on it. I was working that event, but I often wonder if, even as the attendees, because they were kind of being shuffled around and, hey, now this guy's going to talk. Now we're going to go watch this. Now we're going to do this. If it was like every time people were trying to build intimate moments and have personal conversations, they were getting interrupted by these events and stuff. So I feel like Boise allowed, you know, just removed all the barriers and said, okay, now actually, you know, spend this time together. So,
yeah, I was actually thinking that maybe like a retreat center would give, like with communal areas and then private spaces, so that you could actually take some downtime and process what's happening. Because, like, I don't know, I noticed that in Olympia where I just occasionally needed to kind of just wander off. Like, I wandered off into the library and looked at Philip K. Dick books because it was right down the street.
Yeah.
Just, you know, for 5 minutes of, I wonder what Andras's public library looks like. I wanted to see if the book club book was in there.
So, it was right across the street. I mean, from Fertile Grounds or
yeah,
whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
But as far as like the larger, it's interesting because as far as the operation is just kind of the operation, the company, the what we do. I don't know. You go to the About page and it looks like we know what we're doing. Multimedia artists and publishers of books, videos, and over 600 hours of podcasts exploring synchronicity at the intersection of myths, magic, media, and mindscapes. It's like, yeah, fuck yeah, we know what we're doing. We are a community exploring the impossible.
Hmm.
Well, you know, It's funny because I go back and forth on that. Like I think again, I feel like there's got to be the intake and out-breath expressions are both necessary. You know, when I feel like we're getting too much of like, we know what the fuck we're doing, it's like important to take a step back and be like, hey, you know, are we being, you know, responsible, and what is the goal? You know, so you're saying, oh, the goal was to sell sync books, and Will was like, whoa, you know what, the goal was to, you know, you guys are joking, but I'm saying, well, like, this question of what was, you know, it's like you realize we're building a machine and you're not even sure what that machine, what is the,
you
the,
know,
what is the machine doing?
What is it doing?
Right. You know, if there's a goal, and you ask all these sorts of big questions.
You're always building a platform to support artists.
Well, no, I was going to say, so like I'm saying, like there's a good, I'm talking about the unintended
consequences,
things.
Right.
Consequences, right. You know, like, hey, are we helping people, or are we advocating schizophrenia to people that are mentally unstable, or are we – I mean, that's a serious question
it
I
is,
ask myself sometimes.
But
you know?
I think I feel really good about the content that we create now. Like,
it's, yeah.
I don't feel like I'm putting anything – everything comes with – it's not like we're – like trigger warnings, but definitely we are the ones saying – yeah, all this stuff has consequences. Be careful with what you're...
I guess my point is I do feel that it's important to... So like you, Joe, you said to me the other day, you said, I work in spurts. And it's true. Again, if you look back over things, I have like, holy, should I do all this sort of stuff? And then boom, this book pops out. And then like I disappear for a few months. And then like do all this shit. And then like, oh, we've got like 50 videos. And then I disappear. And then blah, 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 you know, whatever. So like I work in these intense spurts and then I pull back. But for me, I feel like it's important to not only like regather my energy and my inspiration, but also... assess the situation and, you know, again, what are the unintended consequences? And I would agree. I do feel really fucking good about what we're doing. I feel like, again, I feel really proud, not just of my own accomplishments, but of both of you and a million fucking people. So, you know, some people who aren't even in the scene anymore, but were integral in getting this all put together, you know? So, I'm really fucking proud of everything that has this hub, if we can call it that, has gathered enough amazing minds together at different times and different places to make amazing fucking things happen. I feel incredibly proud of that. And I also think it's important sometimes to be like, hey, just want to check in, you know, rather than becoming like a mindless you know, robot and being like, I believe in myself. I just keep going. You know, it's like, hey, just take a step back. How are we doing? You know, is this all still going well? And for me, those moments of self-reflection that are rough, but they're important. And I've come out of this last sort of phase with the feeling that like, yeah, I do feel really I'm like, this sounds way like self-congratulatory, but like, I feel impressed. Like I feel like in the last few months I was just able to kind of like take enough of a step back and really kind of like look this over with fresh eyes. And I'm like, how the fuck did we do that? You know, it's just plain impressive to me. And if no one else feels that way, oh well, but I know like I've impressed I've exceeded – this whole thing has exceeded – it's not just like I'm saying like this venture has far exceeded any hopes or expectations or anything like that that I had 5 years ago. You know, maybe not for you, Doug. I know you were hoping to get your book in Oprah's book club. But
I hate to cut you off, Alan. But that was 42 minutes. You could just shove that last comment up. we'll just keep going. You mentioned earlier about you like were hinting about dropping some kind of news or something.
Oh,
We can just naturally get to it if you like.
No, sorry. Yeah, what I was talking about before was not news per se. No, I was saying, like, how deep did we want to go into, like, what's what? How did this happen? And I don't know that we need to retread all that. I'm just saying that was a different. Sorry, that was a different question. I wouldn't mind if you don't mind cut, you know, whatever. Okay, so that's been 42 minutes. Do you want to? I'm tempted to talk about my plans for this video, but I don't know if this is necessarily the time or place for that. You know, I'm willing to do whatever. That this is, again, this isn't like me being a guest on your show necessarily, but all of us, you know, having a conversation. So it's up to you guys what you'd like to. You know, Will, you asked Doug, you know, what was the point of this tonight? Well, I would ask you, you know, what did you want to highlight?
No, I was just trying to get back on track as far as like what we were trying to accomplish. Like, where do we want to go next? Because, I mean, it seems like we're talking a lot about, you know, what we've gotten done up until this point, but
let's turn it around. Let's turn it around. What's fascinating you, Will? What do you see yourself working on? How do you want to spend your valuable free time, which seems to get less and less as our daughters get older and older?
Shit, I got one in high school now, homie. I got to work concession stand at volleyball and shit.
The people are growing up around us.
Almost certainly. And it's, I don't know. I mean, I'm still working little by little on different stuff. The thing is I don't think that I'll ever quit researching. Like, sincerely, I still go out and find obscure movies just because I have hunches about them. And anything that Andras Jones sends me, I mean, I haven't made it a big deal, but I've done like the videos that highlight the guest for like the last 5 Radio 8 Balls.
Does he know where he's going ahead of time so like he can start pointing you at the next?
Well, no, I mean, let's see, the David Urie one we did in like a week or 2 weeks. The last couple ones have been the one for Lisa Wilcox, the very last one we did. He told me like maybe a month before he needed it. Not even that. I think it was like 3 weeks, and I was actually leaving town on one of those weeks, so it was like I had a week to get everything together. Then I left for a week. Then I had like a week to put it all into a product. And so, I mean, some of them are shoot by the hip. But the thing with like Lisa Wilcox is I was already kind of investigating her. Like, I actually confronted Lisa Wilcox in Orlando when I went down in 2012 to the horror festival that was there with Andras. Like, I talked to her. We had this little sink where the waiter had given me her wine. Andras leaves the table. I thought it was his wine, so I just started drinking Andras's wine. And I'm like in the middle of all of these friggin'. I'm like the entire cast of Nightmare on Elm Street 4. I felt a little awkward. Andras sits me down and is like, here, you sit with these people. And they're all talking. Like, there's a couple of different movie stars and stuff that were sitting there that weren't in Nightmare on Elm Street. And I'm like staring at him like, hey, I got to stop doing this. And so I felt a little bit, I got to be doing something. So I picked up this wine glass. And then Lisa Wilcox was like, I think you're drinking my wine. And so, like, I talked to her quite a few times, asked her if she was interested in a product. And I don't think she understood what the hell I was trying to get across to her. And so,
you had, you know, a sense of her sync web.
Yeah, because I had already investigated some of it. So when he came to me with Lisa, I was like, oh, I know exactly which way we're going. Of course, you know, it gets edited and things get thrown away because of the time limitations and stuff. But, you know, I could do more with Lisa. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
The same thing is true with like Ben Urie, the video that I did with Ben Urie. The thing is like, I don't care anymore. Like, You're not going to make a sync video that you reaches everybody because not everybody knows the material. You can make a point out of introducing people to the material.
That's an interesting subject.
and making it interesting for the actors that are involved with the products, because no, they know this material better than anybody. So all of these things are kind of directed towards them. They're directed towards introducing, and they're directed towards being pleasurable for the person who actually stars in the thing. So it's like a different format than what we were used to. When we first started making sync videos, we were dealing with material that everybody knew, like The Matrix and stuff. But after a while, it got to the point where it's like, well, all of this works. And then when I investigated, you know, got way into Andras Jones, I was like, okay, now this is really thick, but these are literally the worst movies ever made. I mean, Andras Jones stars in a movie called The Best Worst Movie Ever. And that's like the highlight of his entire career. And once you break that brain pan of
Which
understanding.
Which one is that?
That's the name of the movie.
It's called The Best Worst?
And it's
a documentary, right? On like
it's
Troll
a doc-
2.
Oh, Troll 2.
Yeah, in fact, it's interesting because I think unbeknownst to Mark LeClaire has been on a couple of Always Records where he actually mentions this movie. And I'm sitting there going, he doesn't even know Andras is in that movie. Now, the thing is Andras Jones somehow wound up as an extra in Troll 2. He's just there for like a split second. And I don't think anybody actually recognizes him in it. But the editing that they did on the documentary about Troll 2 highlights Andras. And so most people recognize him from that movie instead of the original one. Does that make sense?
So that what's fascinating is, I think I understand what Alan's thinking about now. Whereas the where your sync film has gone is really site-specific. Like, you're a really important part of Radio 8 Ball, introducing the celebrity guest at, you know, as the celebrity call-in questions asked. And so your film has a really specific job to do in a short amount of time, and so it has to be really dense, which is what a sync film is anyway. But it has to convey the sync web and introduce the guest to the audience. But it's interesting because you mentioned the idea of that, you know, like what we're attempting to do, it's difficult to reach the larger audience, which opens the conversation up a little bit in terms of what Joe did this past year, which is where he reached a lot of people. Of course he did, because his work is great, but at the same time he capitalized on a moment that was happening, which, you know, people were open to that at that moment. And so it's interesting because I'm thinking in terms of what Alan is, it, you know, I think what you're thinking about doing, Alan. Did you want to talk about that a little bit as far as what? Because it's interesting. The other thing is we started out more with the literary media, and then definitely your practice seems more video editing than anything.
My practice is more video editing. I don't know, man. You know, I'm sitting here right now with on my desk in front of me is a manuscript for a future Sync Book Press book from Zenor.
Oh, cool.
I was looking at, you know, so
how complete is the manuscript? Is it
well? It's pretty complete. So basically, he's taking a bunch of material off his book. Something that like me and Bill Klaus and Kaylee, who you saw in Boise, and a bunch of people who are really into his blog have told him this is not blog material. These are essays. You know, like to read this material, it needs to be read as like a printed thing. And again, it's a thing that I've said it fucking 50 million times, and I don't think anyone really understands the distinction. You know, so it's like the whole McLuhan thing, medium is the message, yada yada.
Yeah.
Like even in the stages of making a book, right? So say like Doug, you did Winter's Labyrinth. Now you wrote it up freehand. Then you typed it up, so you're taking it from freehand into a typed page, right? Then we read it over, and okay, we're correcting mistakes. I read it Jason reads it, you read it, and we're doing all these things and finding typos and all that sort of stuff. And then we send it to the printer and they make a proof copy. And then suddenly you look at that proof copy, and I assume this was your experience, because it's been my experience every time with every book, is that suddenly when I'm looking at the printed proof copy, it feels like a completely different book. It's suddenly just the reading experience is drastically changed of reading something on a printed page, holding an object in your hand versus scrolling through something on a computer screen. It just completely changes the way in which your brain takes in the information, the seriousness. I find with a computer screen, invariably, even when I'm editing and I'm looking intently for typos and stuff, on a computer screen, you're naturally kind of skimming, for lack of a better term. You're kind of skipping words and filling in the pieces, and you're doing all that. Your mind is just taking the information differently. Anyway, someone's just looking at a printed page. I could say, holy shit, there's no period at the end of this sentence. Just looking at it before I even read it, I just, like, there's something visually, whatever. So anyway, he's taking material from his blog. We're just kind of cleaning it up. Little things need to be rewritten and stuff like that, and trying to make it a more sort of concise whole. And so we're in that stage. Jason, when I was out in Olympia just last month, I was able to talk to Jason to see if he was interested in working on this. Jason has helped me edit most of the sync books, sync book press titles. Some more intently than others. And I just sort of reached out to him to see if he was interested. He said, yeah. And, you know, as like within days of being back from Olympia, Jason and I were working together again. Kaylee is making a cover for it. I've seen some of her drawings. They are fucking incredible. It's a thing that I've been kind of stayed quiet about, but that's happening in the background. So like the books aren't dead. It's just I'm being – here's something, man. Like I've realized I have to be really fucking selective about what I do. All these projects take such a fucking commitment, such a time suck. And for me, I didn't want – I was almost at the point where I was like, I don't think I ever want to edit another book. I don't know if I want to do that anymore. And the only exception in my mind was I would do something for Zenor. And when he approached me that he was considering doing this, I was like, I'm in, you know, no question. That's...
That said, though, I would like to highlight to listeners that the syncbook.com now offers something that we call the community portal.
So yeah, oh yeah.
If you had something that you want, so like that's the thing, people would approach you. Hey, man, I got this idea. It's like, great. You know, we'll host it. You do all the work. And so now we have an arena, like what I was saying. We're building a platform to support artists. There's the space, you know, for a while it was podcast. Man, I really think I got a great podcast in me. And we'd say, sure, get about five shows in the can. Or I don't even think it was that many. Do about four shows in the can and we'll, you know, we'll get it set up. But so now,
you know, it's so funny, right? I broke that rule for Wally, and maybe I shouldn't have.
Right? But, how many shows did he do?
Four.
It is so much work. But the funny thing is that after you start doing that, it becomes routine. I understand how the momentum of something is so difficult. Like, it's the Overlook Hotel. Jack wants to blow it up because it's too much. All that history in the basement, he just wants it to blow up. That's not me. That's not me. I'm not channeling that. I love 42 minutes. I gotta say... It's
but you know, here's something. I mean, let's talk real for a minute. So obviously the enterprise, the sync book or sync book press or whatever the fuck we want to, like, the umbrella name of it is, the focus has changed multiple times over the last few years.
Yeah.
So we started out the first maybe year or two the focus was books. So Sync Book 1, Accidental Initiations, Winter's Labyrinth, and Sync Book 2 all were created within about a two-year span. Right?
Yeah.
That's four books in 2 years, which is at this point, that sounds ridiculous to me. But I don't know how we did that, but that happened, right? But then 42 Minutes really was being its thing. And then Bill and David and myself start always record, and that becomes a thing. And it seemed like and I would say even before Sync Book, right, was the blog. So it was like we were blogging, then we were making books, then we were making podcasts, and then maybe in the last like each year or so, it's been videos, right? So, which not that the you know that's a new thing. Bikata and Wilner and Will Morgan were making sync videos many years ago. But I'm just saying, like, the focus of the sync book, of this website, of our communal sort of focal point, has shifted multiple times in the last few years. And I don't think to say, like, you know, that we are any one thing. That's why I sort of like the expression of, you know, multimedia, because everyone has their different strengths. So, you know, Doug, you're definitely an audio guy, but you're also a literary guy. You know, Will is obviously making podcasts, has been making podcasts for years, but he's also an amazing video editor, you know. So everyone's got their thing, you know. Right, Andras has got the showman sort of, you know, side of him as the host of Radio 8 Ball, but he also does his music, you know. And through the last few years of working with him, I've taught him how to use a video editor, and he's been editing footage and definitely developing that skill, you know? So it's like everyone's getting to play in these different sandboxes, and I honestly wouldn't have it any other way. It's like when I get burned out on certain sort of things, or I just feel the need to play in a different sandbox, it's like, okay, I want to do videos for a while. Okay, well, I haven't done a book in a while. Maybe I could do that again. You know, I don't know. It just feels good to kind of keep not only limber and keep these multiple skills, but also figure out how to like cross-pollinate between them. What did you learn from one format or medium that you can apply to another? I don't know. It's I just feel good about the sort of variety, but maybe as an audience, it's a little like whiplash of we're sort of all over the place.
Yeah, I don't know. That's a good question.
So let me tell you something. I had a guy just a few years ago. I had a guy, like a professional web fucking dude, you know, whatever, like
sure.
Design and marketing.
Yeah.
One of those fucks, right? Whatever, it wasn't even long. It's a long story, but like him and I got to talking. He offered to take a look at the site. I was like, I ain't fucking paying you. I'm not interested in the service, you know, but I'm open to hearing you out. And he was just like, there's way too much happening on this site. You know, you can't be doing videos and podcasts and books and this and this and this. Pick a fucking thing and that's what your website is. All the other shit's got to go. And I'm like, yeah, but the mess is what we're doing. We are doing all of these things. And I get it. It's probably a bad marketing strategy, but this is what it is. Again, I don't know that this will ever be a great business venture, but it's we are collecting this really sort of prolific and varied collection of things.
And that's probably worth noting that as far as a business venture, that we pay our web guy $100 a month. I don't know it's not a big disclosure, but everything else pretty much just pays for everything else.
And here's something I'd like to fucking talk about. We just took on a new expense in the last few months.
Oh, did we? What's that?
So yeah, I didn't run this. I didn't talk to you about this. I mean, I was it had come down to I was even saying if it, you know, long story. After everyone's stuff was getting yanked off YouTube for copyright, Guillaume and I had a conversation about what would it take to host our own server, basically host our own videos, right? I didn't want to host them on the Syncbook site because then that copyright if copyright claims come, I wouldn't want to endanger the entire website. So I bought the domain fairusevideos.org, right? And people in the kitchen sink, and they're still working on it. I know Guillaume got it to a point where it was working pretty well, but I just spoke to David about it 2 days ago, and he said they're still tweaking some stuff. Because I basically said to David when he was releasing even the video of his stuff from Olympia, I was like, why is this stuff still being linked to Dropbox? I'm paying a pretty hefty sum of money to have our own server that no one could demand us to remove, or no one, you know, at least they would have to go through the whole copyright claim. They'd have to basically sue us to shut it down, but they couldn't just flip a switch and turn us off. It's pretty expensive. I was like, why aren't you using this? Because if you're not using it, I don't want to fucking be paying for it. So I hope people will realize that, again, that for me, there's no real, like, this for me is I'm trying to problem solve issues that are coming up in the community. I mean, I'm not even making all these, videos with like, here's a movie and then here's with, albums on it. I mean, I enjoy doing that from time to time, but that's not my
Does your
passion.
work?
Well, sorry, I just want to say, even though it's not my passion, like my personal passion, I'm trying, as I've always tried to do, is support the passions of people in this community and the expressions of how they want to express synchronicity and all this sort of stuff. So this, for me, was a very worthwhile venture to try and support this in a way that, so like the I got a .org and in fair use is in the URL so that we've already stated our intention. It was just kind of the whole thing is an exercise in really trying to make it's almost like it's a political maneuver to say we're going to host our own shit, and the whole point of the website is that it is fair use. We are claiming fair use, and we are going to infringe the fuck out of copyrights, but not just like, hey, let's host, Batman versus Superman. Like, it's not like it's just a file sharing torrent or something. It's like, no, here's artistic expressions, here's repurposed but no one else can tell us, what is acceptable by YouTube standards or not. And we're going to set our own standards, and we'll succeed or fail on those claims. Again, just trying to basically trying to create an umbrella, as you said, create a platform for everyone to be able to do their thing. That's, Will said the purpose of SyncBook was to start a conversation. You said it was to sell books. I'm saying it's to create a platform. Well, all these things are sort of tongue in cheek, but to say, like, for
No,
real,
no, no. I said 42 minutes started as the conversation started. So we're clear. No, I get what you're saying. That's why I love SyncBook. There's so much going on that, from time to time I'm into what the sync ups or what people are doing with that. Or, there's so much other stuff that you can dig into. There's different levels to how this shit lays out. And we don't even know if really and truly all of this stuff is connected other than intuition. What the Synchromystem style of movie analyzation and the albums that go with movies, that might not even be related in some weird way. And SyncBook's kind of a platform for all of those things to be explored, which is the great thing about it, I feel.
On the Always Record, when David explained it, though, so like he was able as the artist to create the artwork, but then, like, what happens in a graduate program in art is you have to explain what the hell you're doing, which is exactly, so like the graduate course in sync, David did. He broke it down and he explained how, like, it wasn't thrown together. There was, like, he was able to articulate exactly the importance of this. And you're like, oh my God. You know, it's not stoned out garbage. There's depths and depths to this. It just blew my mind. So, yeah. With that site, is it... I mean, I went to fairuse.org. Will the videos actually be on that page, or is that...
It's fair use videos. But, I mean, no, it's a hosting space. So the videos will still be on the syncbook.com.
Gotcha.
So there's a few there. The URLs are, for lack of a better term, secret. Like, I don't have it linked up. You'd have to type in the exact URL. But, no, we're working on a thing, so... Basically, the video, the same way, like if you embedded a YouTube, right? If let's say you wanted to watch Sync Quick News on the syncbook.com, right? You could go to the syncbook.com, you can click on Sync Quick News, or you could just go to the URL, the syncbook.com/quick, right? And it'll take you to it, whatever. And now you'll see an embedded video that you can play the episodes, right?
Gotcha.
Except, again, that's hosted, that video that you're watching, even though you're watching Sync Quick News on our site, the video itself lives on either YouTube or Vimeo. So we're also paying Vimeo for a, but, you know, Vimeo has been a safer space than YouTube, but it's not completely safe. And anyway, so Vimeo is just like 10 bucks a month or something. It's not terrible. But so those videos are hosted on a YouTube or a Vimeo or whatever. So basically what Guillaume and I are paying for and what he's building is a space to host those things. So you would still come to the syncbook.com to watch them, but they would, the files themselves would be hosted on basically our own version of YouTube, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, and you know, down the road, maybe that site, maybe we make an interface for that site that people, you know, that you could watch the video straight on that page or whatever. But anyway, it's just, these are some of the things that are in the works. So, like, I'm sure if you're looking at the website, it looks like we've slowed down. You know, I'm not creating a ton of Always Records. I'm not creating a ton of Sync Quick Newses. I'm not, you know, it looks like the only thing that's really kept up is 42 minutes. And an occasional Always Record sneaks out. But you got to realize a few things. I got another piece of news is that John McGuire text messaged me this week and said he's got another Pentimental that'll be out in a few weeks that he's finishing up. You know, last time he did one was in March. Everyone loved that fucking show. I loved that show. I'm really happy that he's, you know, he's still doing what he can do with his current schedule and everything, and he's going to make more happen. I didn't bug him about it. I didn't anything. It was a total surprise to me to get that message, and I'm very happy by that news. Again, you know, I didn't tell anybody I'm working on the Zenor book. I didn't really make a big deal out of the fair use things. But there's a lot we are still doing to continue building things and keep putting a bunch of pieces into place. I just, if you don't mind, I want to take a step back. Doug, you started to mention the community network. So there were a bunch of shows that some of them were just short-lived things, right? What did Ezra do? 3 episodes of a podcast or something like that. While we did 4, Kevin Halcott was doing his hypnosis. I think he did about 7 episodes of that. Marty Weeds obviously did 20 something episodes. We had Fratorex for a while. We had Pentimental. We had Sync Quick News. We had Synchronize. Misty Greer started making these videos where she was reading poetry or Nietzsche. That guy Bob Dobbs made a bunch of episodes of a show called It's In My Chart. All these things, we've found a way to kind of host a space that is a platform that for people who wanted to do shows, whether they were short-lived or not, that they'd have a place to live. So if you go to the website and you click on the, you'll see a little bar there that says community network, that'll sort of pull up everything that's sort of under the heading of basically other shows other than 42 Minutes Always Record. And, you know, some things that maybe people haven't been exposed to before, but these are sort of allowing the community, giving them a home for some of this stuff to be hosted somewhere and have a place to, you know, get the same curated treatment that our podcasts do. This to me is something that makes me happy, that just those giving those things a place to live. And I've even considered, I didn't pursue it, but I spoke to Chris Knowles. Chris Knowles did about 4 episodes of a podcast a few years ago. They're not hosted anywhere. He was having trouble getting them hosted somewhere, and it sort of just died. And I was just like, yo, man, if you want, I'm not charging people money for them, but if you just want a place for them to live, I'd love to provide a home for them. Let's just put those 4 fucking episodes up. Just give them a fucking home, you know? This way the people can hear that stuff, because to me that's still in our community. You know, Steve Wilner did, 7 episodes of an old podcast called Cracks in a Wall. I loved that fucking podcast. That was my favorite fucking podcast. Where is that? You know, like, why is no one talking about that? I'd love to give that a fucking home. So even things from the past, just give them a home. For me, that's what that community network is. And also, of course, if people have new ideas, if people want to do something, they would have we would have a way to provide that wouldn't kill us to just like have to. I mean, every time, you know, when Ezra or Wally was like, hey, I want to make a new show, Guillaume and I would have to sit down for 3 days straight. He would have to do a bunch of code, and we'd have to work through all the like formatting and all the databasing and all this sort of stuff. Now we've streamlined that process. So all these things are happening behind the scenes that, even though it seems like we're in a slow period, it's definitely fucking not. It's slow on the surface. It's slow in output of content, but it's there's a ton of maintenance, repair, and infrastructure being built for this whole thing in the future. And maybe I want to take a let you guys talk for a few minutes, but maybe at some point I'll give also where I want to sort of the next big project for all this to go. But I'd like to just let you guys take over for a minute.
No, actually it's 10:30. I got to go to bed. So I love you guys, but I gotta go to bed.
The reality is rough, isn't it?
Right, I gotta wake up at 4:45. I'm done.
4:45?
Yeah.
Yeah, reality is really fucking rough. I'm sorry, man.
I get up at 5, Will. 5. That's when I do it. I take 15 minutes to drink coffee and put clothes on. And I drive across town.
Hey, man. Thank you for, more than 5 years, but... thanks for doing this tonight, and thanks for all your work over the last 5 years and for all your years of friendship.
Ditto, kiddo. I mean... we got this. It's been much... I'm so very impressed by both of you guys, and I think that, you know, you don't need to be thanking me. I need to be thanking both of you, because more than anything... you know, the 42 Minutes and Sync Book have given me a platform to branch out and talk to the individuals that I want to talk to, and to post my work, and to build individuals who inspire me and that I can inspire. So I appreciate everything that both of you guys have done. And without further ado, I bid you good night.
We'll keep the conversation going Sunday nights. When we can. Sound like a deal, pal?
I'll talk to you soon.
All right.
Bye.
Bye-bye. Yeah, so, listeners, Will's job has changed. Before years, it was 42 minutes Tuesday mornings, like clockwork. And then I could change my job, and that threw that all out of whack. And we're trying to find the space, the day, and kind of was Mondays, but even that wasn't working out. And so now it's 42 minutes in limbo, but we're making it work.
Yeah, because I think you were starting to say is your job changed almost a year ago, or I don't know how long ago that was.
Yeah.
And now, just in the last few months, Will's job has changed also. So where you're starting to try and find that groove again, now another major schedule change has happened.
Yeah, he went from like mid shifts to early morning shifts. And so, and that just, I think, has put kind of a crimp on his sync life because he had a lot of late night hours available to him while his family was sleeping for both film perusal and sync, you know, like Skype chats. So, but it's interesting because when he was talking, he was talking about his videos, his products, and the thing that I was thinking about as is like they really are specific functional units is what he's doing. But the people who are still working in video definitely have become craftsmen. Like, for whatever reason, the people still making videos, they're, even though Will referred to them as products, they're all artists. Like, you know, early on, a lot of people were making videos and it's all good work, but, you know, the ones that are still drawn to it, that continue to do it, they're creating amazing, you know, there's just that playfulness that you can do with video as some voice is saying this and the music's doing this and then you show an image of this communicating the sync without having, you know, you're doing all the pointing.
It's just giving you another layer of you know, another sense to play with, right? So, but then, you know, it's not necessarily I don't know if you watched that video. Oh, yeah, sorry. Duh. Yeah, you saw part of it in Olympia.
Yeah.
But do you see
and
the
I
clip?
Tuned out after a minute, not because...
It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. I don't know how much you paid attention, but
I
the
paid
very
attention.
First... Shut the fuck up. The very first clip I used is Eric McLuhan talking about the distinction, like the importance of... the sense, the ears over the eyes.
And you're showing.
And so, well, to me, it was sort of tongue in cheek.
So you're showing the monster from Guillermo del Toro's Pan's Labyrinth.
Pan's Labyrinth, yeah. But no, I'm not even talking about what I was showing. The fact that I was showing anything was the thing. I was taking a podcast, something that was made for the ears. And I'm adding a video layer to it as he's saying, why would you ever try to visually express something that was made for the ears? And so to me, the whole thing was a sort of tongue-in-cheek, why would you do that? There's a primacy of the sense of hearing, at least, you know, what he was expressing. And so whatever, that was just something that I found oddly humorous. I have a weird sense of humor, I guess, but I found it humorous that I would be that clip would express the very thing that I was doing. Point is, I feel like these when you say the video guys, it's yeah, they get this when I play with a video, when Will plays with a video, we get to be showy about it. We get to have the spectacle of the visual stimulus. But you know, audio editing is, to me, it has the potential to be way more powerful. There's a reason, you know, there's a reason that podcasts ruled in our corner of the internet for so long. And I just feel like as a guy, I understand you're a guy who's not making videos, who's looking at it with that little air of jealousy of like, you get to do all the showy cool stuff. You know, you get to do the barrel rolls and the somersaults, you know. Yeah, but there's I feel like the audio is.
There's an intimacy with,
yeah,
with the podcast. Well, because you're piping it usually right into people's ears. And so it's almost like you're reaching your audience directly. Whereas with video, there's so much distraction that you really have to create something Because with audio, we give them so much leeway because the whole point is that you, I think most people are planning on doing something menial at the same time. So like,
right.
They're giving you the benefit of the doubt because they have to do something stupid anyway. And so, but even then, you still have to, like, I know that that's one of the reasons why the 42 minutes intro developed is because I just knew that when I listen to a podcast, if there isn't something that grabs me immediately, usually, you know, I'm like, I'm bored. I'm going to change it. Right. This isn't that interesting. I'll find a different one. And oftentimes I will come back, but just there's that, I need a hook to pull me in.
That's probably true of videos too, though.
Yeah, but because usually I'm looking at a video on the computer screen, that screen has evolved in such a way that it's just built with distractions. And so there's always some activity you could be doing instead of... Like, here's something funny. I'm a sucker. I signed up for a free trial of 3 months of Apple Music because it was free. And I thought, well, I want to listen to Frank Ocean's new album. I don't know that I want to pay for it, but I'll sign up to Apple Music for free. And what I find is that, so here's, it's like a smorgasbord of music, everything you could ever want to listen to, right? And so I listen to 10 seconds of 1,000 songs and then turn it off.
Right.
I don't really listen to music. I'm just listening to, I don't know. I don't even know how you'd.
It's funny. You and I are fucking old men having this conversation. I downloaded Spotify on my phone, and what a piece of shit that is, right? I was listening to it yesterday. I was like shaving, getting ready for work, and I put on like the David Bowie artist radio station, and like they play like a David Bowie song, and then they play some, I don't know, some other kind of in the same world. And then Phil Collins, what is the song about like homeless people, really depressing, Paradise, Another Day in Paradise? Is that the name of the song? I don't know.
Phil Collins and David Bowie in the same universe.
No, Phil Collins, sad, fucking sad Phil Collins, light pop bullshit, belong on the David Bowie radio station. That was the stupidest. I was just like, all right, Spotify, you failed. I'm deleting this thing. I've had it for a few weeks now. I've tried different artist radio stations or whatever. And that was the line for me. I was already disappointed. And that was just the point at which I was like, no. You clearly don't understand how to, if we're trying to create a mood and I'm trying to give you hints of like, well, I kind of like something like this. No. Anyway. Don't know what the point of that is, but your Apple Music.
The point was that I was just saying that.
You want control. You want to be
able to. Medium is the message, and the message is noise. There's something about all our convenience that has created just impatience and activity, pointless activity. So, we click on our email and we look and we get a little bit of endorphins because, oh, look it, I got a message from, whatever. And then we go to our Facebook and we look. I put a blog post up the other night. That was weird.
God, I don't know the last time I put a blog up.
But I just, it was one of those moments. It's like, well, this is when I would do a blog post. So that was, but yeah. First thought, numerology is so bizarre. Second thought, every year is the year of the BS artist. I don't know what that means. This is a comment on your video. Ugh.
A comment on my video?
Yeah, ThinkQuick 17. So as I was telling you how easy it is to be distracted, I clicked on Facebook to see what was going on.
And somebody commented on my video, numerology is something, are there?
Numerology is so bizarre. That was the first thought. Second thought, every year is the year of the BS artist. I can't interpret it, so I don't know if it's... Everyone's a critic, Alan.
That's fine. Cool. Glad the guy watched it. Or gal.
It was a guy. All right.
Did you check? Did you lift up his tail?
We should wrap it up.
We should wrap it up. I want to sort of leave and leave a vague sort of thing here. I'm going to try to make something and make an announcement. I think I want to do it as a sync quick news. Whatever. Basically, I just need to lay out some information. Basically, I want to pitch a project that by pitch, I mean, I'm probably going to do it anyway. I've already spoken to a number of key players in the team that I would envision working on this. But I also want to enlist the aid of our podcast listening audience. To me, this is the key, the major component in this. And this would be the next major sort of sync, well, at least Alan undertaking, if not sync book undertaking. And to give you like a little teaser here, is to say I started working on something I don't know, about a month ago, and within a few days of working on it, I got a message from Joe Alexander, who said, "Hey, Alan, what do you think if we worked on this idea I had? I want to work with you on this idea that I had." And it was the idea that I had already started working on just a few days earlier. And I just freaked the fuck out and was like, holy shit, that's an undeniable, you know, to me, right, we're guys working in synchronicity, I'm like, oh, this is it. This is the thing that I'm doing. Like, there's no question about that anymore. It seems big, unwieldy project, but how do I deny that? Synchronicity. So, and how do I deny the opportunity to work with Joe and a bunch of people that I respect and enjoy their work? And so I'm going to make an announcement fairly soon. Keep your ears open and your eyes open for that. And this is something that I want everyone's participation in. I feel pretty fucking excited about it. This is like a no-joke, really cool thing that I'm excited about. But again, it's not the only thing that's going on. As I said, I got this few other things on my plate. But I feel really excited about this, and I guess all I'd say is at 5 years, I feel like we've come a long way, but there's still a long way to go, and you know, thanks for being there with us all this time, or for as long as you've been around. If you haven't been around for the full 5 years, and if maybe you're a new person, I don't fucking know, man, go back and look. We got, I feel like for myself, like I said, I'm the guy who made a bunch of this shit, and just going back and looking at some of the old stuff we did, it was like, wow, I forgot all about this or whatever. There is so much amazing shit in our archives. We should all be super fucking proud of ourselves. And if you have not dug deep into the many labyrinthine rabbit holes on the syncbook.com, I feel like the 5-year anniversary is the perfect time to do so. check out all the shit that's happened in the last 5 years. It's pretty fucking amazing. And if you don't think it's amazing, you know, go fuck yourself. I don't care. But it's I think it's pretty fucking cool. And if you didn't think it was amazing, you probably wouldn't be listening this far into this random fucking podcast. So you probably agree with me. It's pretty fucking cool.
You've been listening to 42 Minutes of Production of SyncBook Radio and thesyncbook.com. For more information about the SyncBook, our guests, to check out past shows, or to subscribe to the podcast via iTunes, please be sure and visit our website at thesyncbook.com. If you like this podcast and would like more, consider becoming a SyncBook Plus member. Some of the membership benefits include full access to complete audio archive, discounts on books, behind-the-scenes scripts, bonus audio and video, as well as seasonal online hangouts with the hosts.
So that's I noticed you changed that. Is that where we're going? It's seasonal. Does that mean like every 3 months, or like how often do you want to do the hangouts now?
That sounds like I'm the boss.
You are. Look, you know,
but I didn't say thanks. Thanks, Alan, for sharing this 42 minutes.
But I don't care. You have to thank. Look, so I'm spending our money on fucking video hosting for David Plate. You could be the boss of making these plans, which clearly you've already started to. So I respect your bossiness. You respect my bossiness. I'm just asking, what are you thinking here? What are we changing this to?
I think for now, for the time being, every 3 months. And so it'll kind of fall in line with the seasonal book club, roughly speaking. So,
you're not sure I'm making those the same thing.
No, they're not the big, sort of, like, yeah, just as a way to track them in my head.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, so there's like a spring, summer, fall, winter, all that sort of
exactly.
stuff. Like a season, right, season, got you, got it, got it.
As well as seasonal, well, because it's hard to know the value of something. That's the thing. So if there's an outcry that says, no, this is the best thing. The thing is, it's kind of the same people every month. And so if there's a demand for it, then certainly we'll go back to monthly. But for me, I know it's just, I don't know. I was wondering how it would change the dynamics of the thing if we did it less frequently.
Right, something that you hold out for and you really anticipate.
Yeah.
Right, I do feel like there came a point where some people were either being treating it informally, because even though a month is a long time, it was often enough that it comes to like, I can miss this one, or I can, you know, sort of we chit-chat through this one rather than, hey, this is more of an event. This is the hangout for the summer or for the fall or whatever. I get it. I totally get that.
Yeah. And the other component is that, I mean, so if it's monthly, you know, maybe I just don't know about the value of recording everything and then creating, you know, the document for members who couldn't be there but might want to be there and they want to listen because it's an interesting conversation anyway. It's just how much of this, what's the value of the work that we put in and who's getting what out of it. And if it's not enough to justify it, then maybe we'll, you know, try something else. It all changes and evolves, but I don't think we should scrap them. I definitely think there's a value.
Sure. As I was trying to say earlier, I feel like our entire SyncBook enterprise for the last 5 years that Doug and I have been working together. And by the way, I feel like part of that history, for whatever it's worth, is that at that cabin, as we were looking over the proof for the SyncBook, you know, you were the one that said we should have a book publishing, you know, company brand, SyncBook Press type thing. You know, I've seen you as a partner and an equal in all this for many years, and I think what you're expressing here, as same as I've been expressing throughout the night, is, you know, the only constant is change. We've remained incredibly fluid and flexible and, you know, changing over time. Not with our, like, you know, we're still interested in synchronicity and still trying to do the same basic things, but just it's a continually evolving experiment of how do we do it? You know, what is the format? What is the structure? What is the artistic expression? What is the business model? What is the everything? You know, it has been a continually evolving, flexible thing, and I've enjoyed that about it. Sometimes it's, you know, it's changed by necessity, but it's also whatever.
It's interesting because, like, we're talking about what was the point, and so I know for me from day one. When we were blogging, I could see how much great work we were doing, but there was no possibility of ever getting paid for it. And so it's not like I'm looking to get paid, but like there was no possibility of it. Like the only way would be like to have Oprah find your blog and decide that, you know, it's like there's no product there. So by creating the syncbook.com, at least there was the possibility that we're creating something that could be valued and then actually there would be a way to get paid. Like, I want to create art and I'm not doing it to get paid, but at the same time, it would be nice that that possibility was there. Like, we could create the infrastructure so that artists could be paid for their work. And it seems like, I mean, that's why the syncbook.com is a nice thing, because all the different extensions all refer back to the central node, and that possibility is there. You know?
Sure. I mean, when we talk about accomplishments, I'm fucking ecstatic that at least the website is paying for itself at this point. I mean, internet business masterminds or something, but for a guy who put a lot of time and his own money into the thing, to see it be self-sufficient is a really nice thing to see. I feel really fucking good about it. So,
and we made t-shirts, you know, after five.
I love my t-shirt, by the way. I'm wearing mine right now.
Yeah, like, and so it all is paying itself forward. Like part, some of this stuff partially helps create the events and things.
Yeah, I feel like it's all, you know, it's all connected.
Yeah. Right? And all this and more can be found at thesyncbook.com/membership. Thanks so much. And I, Pardue, a holy man, am now going to join the Great Hall.
What's that from?
It's from Monsters and Mazes. Right when Tom Hanks is about to jump off the World Trade Center.
Oh. Say it again.
I combined two lines. He doesn't really. They say, Pardue, what are you doing? I am now going to join the Great Hall.
Gotcha.
It was one of my... Because the movie... My node was 1982, mixed up with the World Trade Center. And that was a 1982 film. So I was... that's still my through line. The blog post I did the other night was... Rihanna mixed up into that whole thing. So her Star Trek song is called Sledgehammer, but a couple years ago I did a post called The Wrecking Crew, which was all about 1982 and how that interacted with the idea of Oblivion or like a Wrecking Crew, which is interesting because this sync came to me.
Controlled Demolition, yeah.
Yeah, right. So...
So is this Rihanna doing a cover of Peter Gabriel's Sledgehammer?
No, but she's in like Star Trek alien makeup as she's singing the song, because it's a song from the newest Star Trek movie. But the line, I mean, it's a.
They have sledgehammers in the future? I don't understand pop culture anymore. I'm completely at a loss here. I think something happened at some point. I don't know if I just got old or I stopped getting the joke or something. I don't get it. Why would there be sledgehammers in the future? They have fucking lasers and shit.
Yeah. Well, not on dirt, the dirt planet where she's casting her metal birds up into the sky with her hands. She doesn't actually have a sledgehammer.
Is she in the movie? She's an actress in the movie?
She might be. I don't know enough to know anything, but it's kind of intimate.
All right, you didn't see the movie.
I see about 2 movies a year.
Yeah.
I saw the new Ghostbusters. It was pretty funny, I gotta say.
Really? First person I've heard say that, okay.
I really enjoyed it, but it was more of a family movie in that respect because we were all there.
Right. I imagine going with your kids to see something is a different experience because you're being less critical and you're just enjoying the moment. If the kids are enjoying it, then that's a happy moment.
Well, and my wife was happy. It was a fun movie. So, all good. All right. Well, it looks like it's probably...
It's 1 a.m.
Yeah.
Time to go. My ma'am, thank you for this. Have a great night.
Yeah, we'll be in touch. I'm glad that we could connect and do a show, and we'll just keep going down this road. And you know I'm going to end with a Bill Collins song, probably, right?
No, can we do Peter Gabriel's? Let's do a good song. Do Peter Gabriel's Sledgehammer, not that Bill Collins song.
Okay.
It's been stuck in my head for 2 days, and it's terrible. I mean, I like the message of it and all. It's just, it's a bad song. It's like, oh, that was the thing I had on fucking Spotify, Frank Zappa Radio, and they kept playing Eric Clapton, Tears in Heaven. Like, what the fuck? Why do you think I want to listen to this shit? I put on fucking Frank Zappa, not Eric Clapton sad that he sacrificed his little baby to Satan or something. Like, fuck you. I don't want to hear that shit.
Oh, the great Satan. All right, well, you have a good night, and I will be in touch.
All right, have a good one.
All right, take it right away.
Cause I